This is the MetMa 18 podcast. I'm Lisa Agostini. So we've found a slightly quiet spot outside the Centro Cultural La Merced, and we listened to Maeva Cifuentes and Richard Lackey, their talk this morning, which was whether the legal translator had a role in mediating style. So do you want to kind of give us a brief summary of what it was about? Because it's based around a survey that you had done.
So we did a survey set with a few different examples of translation of a legal text, and some of them were sticking quite closely to the source text. So for example, instead of writing out when the date was written out in words, we would keep it like that or change it to a number format, or totally recasting a sentence where it was a very long one, or maybe dividing it. And we asked translators, some, not all were legal translators, some were not specialized in legal translation, some were lawyer linguists, and we asked them basically to choose between two options.
The three examples we gave were taken from contracts, so that's where we focused on the legal translations. One of them was whether the date should be written out in words, the 2nd of August of 2018, or just the number 2 August 2018. So that was the first example. The second example was whether if the party to a contract has been defined in all capital letters, all the letters of the word are capitals in the source, would you stick with that in the translation? So it was seller in this example, or would you just capitalize the first letter, or would you not capitalize it at all? And then the third example was where a number was given in the source in both as a word and then in brackets as a numeral, would you keep that or would you just admit that? So for some of these examples, they might come up just once in a text, but sometimes they might come up hundreds of times. So how would you display that translation for the reader?
I also want to add that these are three examples we used for the talk, but the survey we actually had 10.
So it was trying to distinguish between two different types of legal language that you could use, plain legal English versus a more literary.
That's what we broadly defined it as. So we use the term plain legal English to mean more concise things, but it didn't necessarily mean fully plain legal English. And we sort of tried to differentiate between plainer or more archaic or more traditional forms. So we really forced people into just using one of these two options. Whereas in reality, there are a variety of translation decisions. We wanted to really force them between one side or the other and see roughly where people are on this scale. We wrote an article for the ITI Bulletin explaining the motives behind our talk, and we're also going to put out a link with the results of our survey for everyone who participated.
A lot of people seem to think that plain legal English was actually dumbing down the English instead of just making it clearer. And also there was a lot of people who said perhaps that plain legal English, they said, okay, plain legal English is good, but make sure that you keep the high register. Where other people would say plain legal English is bad because you need the high register. So we see that not everybody thinks that, some people think that plain legal English and register are connected, and other people think that it's not.
You talked about the difference between using a higher register and plain legal English. Can both coexist, or is that a paradox in itself?
Yeah, I mean, there was a variety of answers. So some people would say, yes, you can use plain legal English, but make sure that you keep the high register. And others would say that you can't use plain legal English, specifically because to them that would mean to get rid of the higher register. So, you know, it's undefined right now. So far we've understood that it's not clear, there's no consensus whether how interrelated the plain legal English or the level of formality of the register.
Do you both, as legal translators, find that you veer more towards using plain English language?
Yes. We have slightly different styles. I mean, our styles are quite similar. We review our work quite often. But I think that Richard goes even a little bit more towards standard English than I, for example, I would keep the the digital, I would keep the repetition. But I think for me, I were quite closer to plain legal English.
And that's in all contexts of contracts, all sort of very basic agreements, maybe service agreements, all kind of more complicated corporate contracts.
So we did try to focus it just on contracts, because actually sometimes the language is different in legislation or court. There are different contexts, but contracts are something that everyone comes across. I think even the choices I would make would depend on the context. I translated something last week, and it was a merger agreement, and it was about the number of shares. And so every time that the number is written out in words and then in numbers in the background, I would just keep the numbers there, because it was just tiresome. I would check if they were the same, and that's something you need to do just to make sure that there's not a mistake there. But just to have the number 3,722,422 there, it just became very tiresome to do the same. And I think actually the reader just wanted to see what was in the original, in this case anyway. So it was something where I could know what the reader wanted and try to give them that without making it extra complicated.
So ultimately, what you're aiming for is to develop a style guide.
Not specifically a style guide, because there are already style guides available. Ken Adams, and there are some other ones. Even just for standard English, there are style guides available. What interests us a little bit more is a brief for the client to know specifically, to figure out the purpose of the job. And then, for example, if it's going to be used in court, then there's... you have to take a different approach than it's for a B2B contract that you just need to sign to make a deal. So we wanted to find a way to start the dialogue with the client. And we could say in there at the beginning, oh, we choose this style guide for when it comes to grammar, punctuation, etc. And then when it comes to the actual legal terminology, we had to find a way to implement, to start discussing with the client how we're going to do it. Or we just tell them how we're going to do it, or involve them in the decision of what kind of approach we're going to take.
We also, as part of the survey, the last open-ended question was, what do you think the translator's role is? So we wanted to try and get an idea of what the translator thought their role was, and what translation bias thought the role was, and what people think about choosing register. One of the first answers, that probably not really surprising, on whether people cared about the register, clients, so this was from an agency, they do care about how to do it, they felt that their clients didn't. And basically, our busy clients don't have the time to consider this, they don't think about this. These were some of the answers that we got. They see translation as an inconvenience, so I think there's probably a lot of room to try to help clients understand what would happen if it's a bad translation, if it's a good translation. I think there's room to improve that.
How much input does the client give you, and does the client actually care?
Yeah, well, as we saw, when a PM told Richard that the clients don't give a bleep, explicit word.
There is always a lack of input. But what we want to do is to try and have maybe a one-page brief or a very short brief or something you can do by phone, so that you can keep it easier to try and get some responses. So often we don't know the reason why they want the translation, and that's something that clients don't consider. They say, we need a translation, can you do the translation? And the subjects that they're interested in, how quickly can you do it, how much does it cost? So really trying to get more on the purpose to then be able to provide something that's fit for the purpose.
Thanks for listening. Please check out all the other podcasts on The Hive.